The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Place to live and acknowledge the many lives they have improved. Mr. Speaker, I request notice, waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? It is agreed. Would all those in favor of the motion please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded, nay. Motion is carried. No more notices of motion. We'll move on to orders of the day with oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 2:47. Question period will conclude at 3:47. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the Premier's efficiency fee shell game actually got an endorsement from the Ecology Action Centre. Catherine Abreu of the Ecology Action Centre said,
Hold on. Better
wait for the quote. She actually said, and I quote directly, "It's always better for ratepayers to pay for conservation programs." That is, of course, the opposite of what the Premier promised Nova Scotians when he guaranteed them that their efficiency fees would be paid for out of Nova Scotia Power's profits. In light of this endorsement, Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask the Premier if he will now finally admit the obvious, that he broke his promise to the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm so proud of the fact, Mr. Speaker, that we finally have a government, Mr. Speaker, that is actually leading energy policy in this place to the best interests of Nova Scotia ratepayers, Mr. Speaker. Power rates will be going down, Mr. Speaker, January 1. The efficiency tax will come off every power bill in the province. That's $46 million savings, Mr. Speaker. And I think what the Ecology Action said, Mr. Speaker, is that the only way that any Nova Scotian would pay for efficiency programs if it actually was a cheaper fuel source, which in turn would drive power rates down even further.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Well, actually, Mr. Speaker, what Nova Scotians are continuing to look for is a government that actually does what it says it will do in the election and not the opposite. But Ms. Abreu actually had a lot to say about the government shell game. Ms. Abreu of the Ecology Action Centre said, in commending the Premier for charging the efficiency fee right back onto the pocketbooks of Nova Scotians, that, and I quote, "What we've seen with this bill is an acknowledgement that the situation was perhaps more complicated than the Premier's promise suggested." Now, Mr. Speaker, where have we heard that before? That's exactly what the NDP said when they broke their promise to Nova Scotians that they wouldn't raise their taxes. And now we're hearing the same reason for why this government broke their promise to Nova Scotians on their power rates. So I'll ask the Premier, will he now acknowledge the obvious that he made a reckless promise to Nova Scotians and as a result, they will continue to pay the efficiency fee on their power bills?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I will inform the leader of the Conservative Party is that we promised Nova Scotians that we would remove the efficiency tax off every power bill, Mr. Speaker. That will happen as of January 1, 2015, Mr. Speaker. On top of that, Mr. Speaker, we didn't stop there, Mr. Speaker. We actually now are going to continue to drive down fuel sources so that power rates will continue to drop. Why is the leader of the Conservative Party afraid to allow Nova Scotians to pay cheaper for power rates?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if they were truly going to pay less, we'd all cheer that, of course. But when a government promises to take the fee off our bill and then allows the power company to charge it right back onto our bills again in another line, that's not reducing our power rates, Mr. Speaker. That's a shell game and a complicated one at that. But speaking of complicated, Mr. Speaker, the complications and the fine print just get longer and longer. The government announced that Nova Scotia Power would make, in their words, a $37 million contribution to clean Nova Scotia over 10 years. That does not match what the power company itself said on Friday when they described it as a $3.4 million contribution per year, renewable every year for up to 10 years. That's why the Affordable Energy Coalition themselves are concerned that, low-income Nova Scotians will be cut off at any time. Another shell game, this time on the backs of the lowest-income Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. So I'll ask the Premier if he can explain in his elaborate shell game why what his government is saying is not the same as what Nova Scotia Power is saying.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, let me be clear to the leader of the Conservative Party. One thing that Nova Scotia Power and its president know is that this government will dictate energy policy in the province of Nova Scotia. And when we make a commitment to the people of this province, we will deliver on it, and we expect them to deliver on their end of it.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, nurses are the backbone of our health care system, and they work extremely hard to care for their patients, and they want to be treated with dignity and respect. After the Liberal government's essential services legislation, repairing the relationships between nurses and their employer is of the utmost importance. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is this. After what we heard at the Law Amendments Committee and during the protest by health care workers 2 weeks ago, does the Premier believe there's work to be done to repair the relationship between nurses and Capitol Health?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, there's one thing that has become clear to me. After 4 years of that government, Mr. Speaker, not only is there repair to work between nurses, Mr. Speaker, and Capitol Health, there's repair to between every organization in the government of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. It's why I'm so proud of the Minister of Health, who very clearly said he's going around talking, Mr. Speaker, to health care providers, Mr. Speaker, those that deliver it, services to the people of this province, Mr. Speaker. And one thing is certain, we will move from an administrative-focused health care system to one that is clearly focused on patients.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've learned recently that 100 nurses at Capitol Health are being called in by their employer for what Capitol Health is calling investigative meetings into their protest activities. The first step into the possibility of disciplinary action, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, does the Premier believe investigative meetings and disciplinary action will help repair the relationship between nurses and Capitol Health, or will he ask the administration at Capitol Health to respect health care workers' rights to speak out on behalf of their patients?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the Leader of the Opposition is referring to. That is something between the employer, Mr. Speaker, and those that work for the employer, Mr. Speaker. But one thing that I will tell the Leader of the New Democratic Party, quite frankly, is, as we've said all along in the debate, there's been issues raised about the staffing on floors across not only the capital region, but across the province. The Minister of Health has said he's going to investigate. The difference, quite frankly, between us and the NDP is that we don't believe everything has to end up in the collective bargaining process, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, health care workers' morale has sunk to a new low because of the actions of that government. Yesterday, in estimates, when discussing changes to the nursing strategy, the Minister of Health said satisfaction in the workplace is key and that he hopes nurses will stay in the province. Now, Mr. Speaker, the threat of disciplinary action seems pretty unlikely to improve nurses' morale. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. What will he do to ensure nurses in our province aren't driven to leave Nova Scotia because they don't feel respected, they feel threatened?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I can tell you what the Minister of Health is doing, Mr. Speaker, is he's going around, Mr. Speaker, talking to nurses and talking to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, about the issues that they face, Mr. Speaker, quite frankly, which didn't show up on October 22nd. They were there long before we took power, Mr. Speaker. As a matter of fact, I would dare say they were there when that member was Minister of Health. The difference between this party and that party is we're listening and we will respond.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians are waiting for a real plan from this government about their power rates, not just a complicated, elaborate shell game. They're rightly worried that by changing governments, when it comes to power, really nothing has changed, that rate increases lie in their future. Premier says that the government will set power policy. Let me just quote from the president of Nova Scotia Power, who said yesterday, and I quote directly, Nova Scotia Power is looking to defer this winter's fuel bills beyond 2015 based on a request by the Liberal government, and I will table that quote, Mr. Speaker. So I have a pretty simple question for the Premier. Why is he simply kicking rate increases down the road instead of doing what he promised and charge it to the power company instead?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, Mr. Speaker, if there was any party that was going to kick down the road future increases, it was the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker. But let me be clear, Mr. Speaker. The quote that was attributed to the President of Nova Scotia Power is actually not a quote, Mr. Speaker. It was an interpretation in the article. It was not an absolute quote. Let me deliver the quote that was in the article. Nova Scotia Power CEO Bob Hanf said, "The province expressed their concern about affordability, so it's our job to make sure we achieve that objective, Mr. Speaker." Finally, a government that is delivering a message to Nova Scotia Power.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the only message that government...
Order, please. The Honourable Member, Leader of the Official Opposition, has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's pretty obvious the only message that government has delivered to Nova Scotia Power is to put off a rate increase to a future day and charge interest to the ratepayers of Nova Scotia who are still going to get that bill. That's the sad reality, Mr. Speaker. After being promised that the fuel charge would be, or the efficiency charge would be paid for by the profits of the power company, it turns out the biggest defender of those profits is the new Premier of Nova Scotia. That's what's wrong, Mr. Speaker. And it turns out that in an effort to defend the pushing of future rate increases down the road, the Minister of Energy turned himself into Ravine yesterday, pulling out his crystal ball, Mr. Speaker, and said, and I quote from the Minister of Energy as Ravine, "There will probably be a decline in fuel prices in 2016 and 2017. Well, that's comforting to know, but it's also odd since just a few months ago he said, and I quote, "I'm not going to sit here and predict what energy rates will be in the future." Now he's doing just that. And so my question to the Premier is, when will his government get serious about dealing with power rates instead of setting policy by crystal ball?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, let me be clear, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Energy has done something, Mr. Speaker, that we haven't seen in a very long time, Mr. Speaker. On January 15th, Nova Scotia ratepayers will be paying less for energy, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, not only is the government setting its power policy based on ravine-like abilities to predict the future, they're now borrowing the Leon's pay later, not now policy by deferring our costs well into the future, Mr. Speaker. And Nova Scotians deserve better. They already pay the highest power rates in the country, and now they get this elaborate shell game in response from the government. They are struggling to pay their bills every month, and they get a minister that looks in his crystal ball and promises that rates will go down at a future date. Well, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians already had one promise from the Liberals during the election, and they broke that. So why is this promise that fuel rates are going to go down in the future any better than the first one?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we promised Nova Scotians that we would be removing the efficiency tax off every power bill in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. That will take place January 1, 2015, Mr. Speaker. Not only that, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Energy didn't stop there. He continued to ensure to drive, Mr. Speaker, more savings for Nova Scotia ratepayers, Mr. Speaker, by creating, Mr. Speaker, an energy efficiency department that will continue to compete against fuel prices in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, which will continue to drive down prices. But, Mr. Speaker, he went even further than that. He went into the pockets of shareholders, Mr. Speaker, of Nova Scotia Power and said, it's time for you to create an energy program so that no low-income Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, can afford to create take advantage of efficiency programs in this province.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. It has been 25 years since the Marshall Inquiry. That report led to Donald Marshall Jr. being compensated for a wrongful conviction. The commissioners found that the mistreatment of minorities also extended to the black community. The commission had recommended that when a person is wrongfully convicted, an independent judicial inquiry be held to consider a compensation claim. Does the Minister of Justice agree with the lessons learned from the Marshall Inquiry?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I very much appreciate the question. I certainly feel for anybody who's had a difficult experience in the justice system. I think the Honourable Member is referring to a case that may very well be that has just happened in court last week. And as he very well knows, that the defense has dropped the case against the province of malicious prosecution. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the gentleman that she's speaking about, the minister is speaking about, was still wrongfully convicted. And we all know of Gerald Barton. He was a young black man at the time of the offense, or of the alleged offense. He was wrongfully convicted and labeled a sex offender. And we know that doors were likely closed to him over the course of his life for jobs and other opportunities. And he actually said in 2012, and I quote, "I am not angry. It was a dirty trick they played on me. They threw me in jail like I was nothing, and I don't think that's right. And they never even stopped to ask if I was guilty." Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Justice, will the Minister act immediately to let Mr. Barton know that he isn't nothing, that what happened to him was wrong, and that institutionalized racism in our justice system in this province is a thing of the past?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians want to feel confident that the players in the justice system are doing their job to ensure that people are treated fairly. In cases of this sort, they are more complex than what you hear in the media. And as I stated before, I certainly feel for anybody that has gone through what Mr. Barton has gone through. I sympathize, I have a lot of remorse, and it simply is unfair what he went through. And again, the case is still in front of the courts. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Marshall Inquiry said that when it is determined that someone has been wrongfully convicted, a judicial inquiry will be constituted. My final question to the Minister. Will the Minister reaffirm what the Court of Appeal said in 2011, respect the lessons of the Marshall Inquiry, and ensure that an independent judicial inquiry be convened to consider compensation for Mr. Barton?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I will be clear, as this is his second supplementary. The decision has not yet been rendered by the court, and there has not been a verdict of the nature that he is speaking about. So we will await the decision. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, during the CBC leaders' election debate, the Premier, then Leader of the Opposition, said, and I quote, "You cannot continue to allow the utility to continue to drive the energy process in this province because," as he said, "they want to get the most expensive project through because they can get a 9% rate of return, which is good for their shareholders. But Mr. Speaker, under the new Liberal Efficiency Nova Scotia scheme, not only will Nova Scotia Power be able to charge ratepayers directly for the cost of efficiency programs, they'll also be able to directly negotiate the costs of these programs beginning in 2016. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. Why is he now allowing the fox in the hen house by giving Nova Scotia Power a direct say in the cost of efficiency programs?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, no wonder Nova Scotia Power enjoyed it when the NDP power when the NDP were in power. Mr. Speaker, it clearly shows how little they know about the energy policy with that question. Quite frankly, under their plan, Mr. Speaker, every Nova Scotian paid for that efficiency tax on every power bill, Mr. Speaker, regardless of your ability to pay. Mr. Speaker, you were still charged that tax. What we have done, Mr. Speaker, is actually we've created a system, Mr. Speaker, where the only way any Nova Scotian will pay for efficiency programs, Mr. Speaker, if it actually drives savings in the fuel cost, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia Power would prefer the old system under the NDP, Mr. Speaker, but ratepayers will prefer the one we've delivered.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, it's not what the consumer advocate says, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Premier also used to say, that revenue to run efficiency programs would come directly from Nova Scotia Power's shareholders. Now, we now know that promise was not exactly as advertised, and that customers, or ratepayers, not shareholders, will be footing the bill. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is this. Does the Premier believe that there are any differences at all to what he promised before the election and what he's delivering to Nova Scotians now? And if so, perhaps he'd share them.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, prior to the election, every ratepayer had to pay the deficiency tax, or it was affectionately known around this place as the NDP electricity tax, Mr. Speaker. Not only that, Mr. Speaker, they had to pay the highest cost fuel, Mr. Speaker, for every ratepayer, had to pay the highest cost fuel. What we've delivered, Mr. Speaker, is we eliminate the NDP electricity tax, and, Mr. Speaker, we've driven competition to drive fuel prices down, which means more savings, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to table a column from the Chronicle Herald in which Claire McGivern wrote, as of January 1st, the levy is gone, but up to 75% of the cost of ENS could remain built into power bills that, you guessed it, we all pay. So it's not just MLAs on this side of the House, Mr. Speaker, who see a difference between what the Premier promised on energy efficiency before the election and what he says now after the election. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is this. Will the Premier now admit that the Liberal platform was not exactly as advertised and is a bit of a fraud, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what I will tell the honourable member, Mr. Speaker, is that, Mr. Speaker, the piece of legislation that was introduced, Mr. Speaker, drives even further savings, Mr. Speaker, into ratepayers than our platform advertised. So, Mr. Speaker, most Nova Scotians say not only did we deliver, we did better than we said, Mr. Speaker.
The honourable member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. In August, a Grant Thornton report stated that without outside intervention, Nova Scotia Provincial Exhibition Commission in Truro was on a collision course with bankruptcy. And, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Agriculture in January ordered a forensic audit because the Commission owed the province $450,000 and had not been making loan payments and was refusing to hand over its financial data. In total, the Commission is $1.1 million in debt, which includes more than $200,000 it owes to rates tracks across North America. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister, will the Minister update this House of Assembly today on the status of this forensic audit and when it will be finished?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The audit is presently underway and it should be finished, I believe, by the end of July.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his first supplementary.
Thank you, to the minister for that question. Mr. Speaker, it is my understanding this audit is going to cost $100,000 and that as we speak this afternoon, interest is still being added to the Exhibitions Commission's original debt with the Farm Loan Board. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, when will the minister provide clarification on what the board owes, how this money is going to be paid and to whom, and the plan accepted by the province moving forward?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
First of all, I'd like to correct the Honourable Member. The audit will be paid for by the Department of Agriculture, not by the Exhibition Commission. We want to be clear that it's totally independent of that commission, and we get the results straight back to the department.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his final supplementary.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that question. Mr. Speaker, a new three-man board was to have been appointed by the province. But Colchester County residents and all Nova Scotia harness racing owners have yet to learn who that third person will be. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the minister is, will the minister indicate when that third person will be appointed, and can he assure this House and the communities of Truro and Bible Hill that the Truro Raceway will operate its full program this coming season, including the annual provincial exhibition in late August?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to hear that the Honourable Members raised this question. It's a very important question. Yes, indeed, it's going to be a full slate of activities this year, including the provincial exhibition. Horse racing started actually this last weekend. The 4-H program will continue, as will most all of the other programs. And we're very pleased that that's the case. I'm very pleased. Next week, I believe it's Thursday of next week, I will announce the three-person board. And we're very pleased with the people that have put their names forward, and we're already moving towards making the facility a long-term feasible and profitable for change.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Mr. Premier, through you to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, on an interview on CTV on September 10th, 2013, I'll quote from the Premier, "You may not have agreed with everything I said, but I was upfront with you and I told you the truth. I told you the truth before you voted." So, Mr. Speaker, would the Premier characterize his changes to Efficiency Nova Scotia's as being consistent with what he had told voters before the election?
The Honourable Premier.
Yes.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre on his first supplementary.
Off of my papers. Mr. Speaker, I'll give that to someone on the table. Mr. Speaker, and I've got something else coming here too. When asked about the changes to Efficiency Nova Scotia, the Premier's energy minister was quoted as saying, we've come up with a slightly different way of addressing the Liberal campaign promise. So I want to ask...
Did you say slightly?
Slightly. I want to ask this through you, Mr. Speaker. I want to ask the Premier, was cutting the graduate retention rebate a slightly different way addressing the Liberal campaign promise he made to young Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very proud, quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, that for the first time, Mr. Speaker, there's a government that is actually driving investment, Mr. Speaker, and a job creation, Mr. Speaker, to provide to keep more young people here, Mr. Speaker. We're going to increase the number of apprenticeship opportunities, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have research grants out for, Mr. Speaker, for university students. And on top of that, Mr. Speaker, we're doing something that former government would refuse to do, and that is work with the private sector to create job opportunities, Mr. Speaker, for young Nova Scotians to stay here.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre on his final supplementary.
That's a good one, Mr. Speaker. Just a short while ago, we were working too well with the private sector, Mr. Speaker. So, you know, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to table another little document here, Mr. Speaker, that may be of some interest to people on the benches across. It's called the Liberal Platform, so that the Premier, his Energy Minister, and the Cabinet Ministers, and for those that just need some bedtime reading over there, would like to have a read, you know, because it would give some sober second thought. Much like their friends in the Senate, Mr. Speaker. So it's obviously been a long time since anybody's really read this document. So I want to ask the Premier once again around this, Mr. Speaker. After taking away the rights from health care and DCS workers to collectively bargain, imposing arbitrary limits on Efficiency Nova Scotia, and bringing back that time-old tradition of Liberal patronage, Will the Premier finally admit that he has come up with a slightly different way of addressing all the major Liberal campaign promises he made less than a year ago, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, for his question. I want to remind the Honourable Member, quite frankly, it was the New Democratic Party, Mr. Speaker, that took away the right to strike, Mr. Speaker, from paramedics, Mr. Speaker. What we've, Mr. Speaker, have done, Mr. Speaker, is ensured that Nova Scotians receive the health care services, Mr. Speaker, in their communities, the essential service pieces, while continuing to protect the right to strike, Mr. Speaker, for health care workers, Mr. Speaker. And let me be clear, Mr. Speaker, not only have we kept those promises on that platform, Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue to focus on Nova Scotians and provide good government.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, Roots for Youth is an organization that provides crucial supports for young people struggling with homelessness in northern Nova Scotia. Since their official opening in 2011, they have helped hundreds of young people by giving them a safe place to stay, helping them find employment, and addressing the deeper issues of homelessness, including abuse, mental illness, and crime. The government recently denied their request for funding, causing them to lay off 6 employees, leaving 1 to staff the home. My question to the minister, why did the minister deny funding to this important organization?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. For the first time ever this week, I actually looked into Roots. Is it Roots for Youth or Roots for Youth in Pictou County? And I've made a commitment to tour the facility and go and see the work firsthand and what they do. There are many nonprofit organizations across this province that struggle daily, Mr. Speaker. Coming from the nonprofit sector, I know how difficult it is to run a nonprofit sector with or without government funding, and layoffs are a reality, unfortunately, for people who live there. I've made the commitment to go to Pictou County, look at the work firsthand, and I aim to keep that commitment. Scarce resources within the Department of Community Services. We're not accepting any new applications this year until we do an internal review of all organizations that receive discretionary and core funding from the department. But it is on my radar, and I have made that commitment to many members of Pictou opposite the floor to go and tour that facility.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Roots for Youth is developing a plan to become self-sustainable in the coming years. Mr. Speaker, they are not an organization looking for a permanent handout. This organization helps young people who have lost their way to stand on their own 2 feet again. Mr. Speaker, the government recently announced they would be providing SHIF in Yarmouth with the necessary funding to run their program. Mr. Speaker, $350,000. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the government may have committed $350,000 annually. While Yarmouth County would serve as many of the youth in southern Nova Scotia, Roots for Youth provides services for people in Colchester, Pictou, Antigonish, and Cape Breton. My question to the minister, why has the minister given no consideration to regional supports when denying much of northern Nova Scotia's youth with these services?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I had the privilege and the honour to open SHIFT in January and stood in a room that was packed with community members, nonprofit members, the business community, other many level of government officials. Chris was there. Oh, I said his
order,
name again.
Please.
Sorry.
I want to remind the Honourable Minister to refer to the other honourable members by their riding name. The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
That was your fault. Yeah. And I was very privileged to stand there that day in that packed room of community members who had worked years and years to make sure that SHIFT, which previously had not been supported by the previous government, that this youth organization which services the Tri-County area of Southwest Nova, an area of the province that had been hit on a number of fronts with bad economic policies over the last 4 years. So I was very proud to open that. And as a former executive director, I think it's really unfair when organizations criticize other organizations for getting funding. It is an offensive way of doing business in the nonprofit sector. I'd never participated in it. Every nonprofit organization has value. Yeah, it's every organization has the ability to deliver services. So I have absolutely no regret, and am very proud that this party stood behind the people of Yarmouth and shift and opened it.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think what matters in this House today is an estimate. The Minister admitted that this was a campaign issue with a member from Yarmouth, and that it was a political move on their part to give $350,000 to shift. Whereas it looks like the youth up in northern Nova Scotia are not important, or maybe the volunteers are not important. But once again, Mr. Speaker, Roots for Youth struggles to find a way forward, and they have to rely entirely on volunteer supports. Staff to relieve off due to lack of funding are now volunteering at their home because they believe in this cause. Each day is filled with uncertainty for the young people who rely on their supports. And basically, they are in crisis mode now. My question to the Minister, will the Minister make it her priority to meet with Roots for Youth as soon as possible before this important organization is forced to close their doors?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'm completely puzzled. I just listened not less than 5 minutes ago where the Premier was accused of not keeping political platform commitments, and here I did. It was in the platform. It was a commitment of this party. It's open. There are youth in Yarmouth that are now being taken care of because it was a platform commitment, and the Honourable Member knows that. We did not hold back on that. I have made the commitment that I will go to that area. I will meet with staff and I will tour the facility.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, last week when we were debating the elimination of the graduate retention rebate, the minister accused members of the legislature, and I quote, of mixing up the interests of students with the interests of young graduates. They are two very different things, she said. Well, Mr. Speaker, I beg to differ. There are more than 40,000 students in HRM alone who stand to be impacted by the elimination of the graduate retention rebate when they graduate. So, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the minister if she could please explain how the elimination of a program that helps graduates reduce their debt is not of interest to students.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And in answer to the Honourable Member's question, I'd like to remind all members of the House again that what students need when they graduate from university is a job. And that's exactly what we're going to provide for them through the use of our graduate opportunities, through the graduate scholarships, through the other opportunities for co-ops, for internships, and more experience for young people coming into the workforce.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, if it was only so simple, if there was only one thing that people needed in life, just a job. But students need more than a job. They need jobs. They need debt relief. They need to be able to have incentives to stay in the province. They need to be able to invest in starting small businesses. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has a long history of providing debt relief to students and graduates in Nova Scotia at varying levels, dating back to 1993, Mr. Speaker. New information released today by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives confirms our students continue to graduate with some of the highest debt loads in the country. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is this. Why is she slashing support
for post-secondary students to the lowest level in over a decade, when we know they are struggling now more than ever financially.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I would like to pass that question to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the mother of three children, I can tell you I'm very aware of what students go through as they go through their post-secondary education. I have one daughter who graduated several years ago and is unable to work because of illness. I have another daughter who's about to graduate and will go into the job market. Fortunately for her, she has one waiting for her. And I have another child who's in high school. And so we're very aware of the cost of education, Mr. Speaker. Keeping post-secondary education affordable in Nova Scotia is a priority for this government, Mr. Speaker. And we will continue to meet with students on this and other issues. We'll also engage universities to help make post-secondary education more affordable in Nova Scotia, including looking at tuition fees. I would note, Mr. Speaker, that the CCPA tool, the report that's out today, is somewhat misleading. It does not include the Nova Scotia University tuition bursary, which is nearly $1,300, Mr. Speaker. So actually, when it talks about where we are in terms of other provinces, it's entirely inaccurate. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the Minister reads to inform herself about the debt loads that students in this province carry. But it has been well documented in many reports that students in our province carry some of the highest debt loads in the country because they face some of the highest costs in the country for their tuition, Mr. Speaker. Now, I hear members on the government side saying, no, that's not the case. But I would recommend that they inform themselves because the data is clear on this. We have among the highest tuition costs in the country, and debt loads are among the highest in the country. That's just a fact, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I will ask the Minister of Finance again, because the graduate retention rebate is in her department, how long will students have to wait for the minister to realize that eliminating tens of millions of dollars in support of post-secondary students was the wrong thing to do, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I'll have to say it again. There's two very different issues here. Young people are in the workforce are one issue, and people in post-secondary education have different issues. That's exactly why so many student groups actually recommended eliminating the graduate retention rebate, because they wanted money put into post-secondary education. They have very different views and very different needs, Mr. Speaker. But what we do know is that economic development depends on people getting their first job. Nobody was getting the graduate retention rebate unless they had a job and it paid well. They had to owe taxes in this province in order to get that rebate. We want to get more people into the workforce, Mr. Speaker, and that's what we will do.
The Honourable Member for Fairview, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, my riding of Fairview-Clayton Park has the highest number of refugees and new immigrants in Atlantic Canada. The children in these families come into our education system and immediately begin the process of becoming multilingual, learning English as an additional language. Having EAL learners in our system can be seen as a negative or a hurdle that must be overcome. We need to change the perspective and highlight our EAL learners not as students who present a challenge, but instead as gifted learners who will leave our education system with knowledge and proficiency in at least two different languages. Therefore, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is EAL on the agenda for the upcoming curriculum review, and is the Department committed to putting this on the agenda as a priority?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the members, a question that I know is important to her in her constituency, but it's also important to all Nova Scotians. With the influx of immigrants that we have and with what we expect we will have to have in order to grow the population and the economy, we know that English as an alternate language is becoming more and more of a priority. I have said in this House and I've said publicly that the review that's currently underway, the slate is clear, and I would encourage the member and others, if that is an issue, that that comes forward to the panel. We already put $500,000 into that, but perhaps, Mr. Speaker, that is not enough.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. Parents who started arriving at the Cobequid Children's Centre in Sackville at 6 a.m. yesterday found the doors locked and no trace of the owners. The Sackville daycare had been in business for 13 years. The sudden closure left about 50 children without a care, and their parents panicked and confused. So my question to the Minister is, will the Minister advise this House today what the department knew about the financial difficulties at the daycare and when it was first brought to the department's attention?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. It is a very unfortunate situation that the parents found themselves with when they arrived at the daycare. The door was locked and there had been no notice. It is in violation, Mr. Speaker, of what we ask all daycares to do, that's to provide a 120-day notice to both the parents and the families of the children who use those services and to the department. And I will say here, I've said in the media, no notice was given either to the parents and families or to the department.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount, on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Media reports indicate the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development understood the financial difficulties had been worked out with the daycare. When 50 children are left without daycare and parents are provided with no advance notice, it's quite clear that difficulties had not been resolved. So my question to the Minister is, will the Minister provide clarification on what was actually taking place at the board and what led the Minister and officials to think they no longer should have any concerns about the Cobequid Children's Centre?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would like to correct the member that our department and our staff never give up, and we always have concerns about the young children in our system. Mr. Speaker, the center was operated by a company that chose not to respond to us. We have continued to try to reach them by email and by voicemail. Neither one of those responses, neither one of those attempts have been accepted. We have heard nothing from the company. We have informed them by registered mail that they are in violation. And we have always worked with families and centres in order to provide that service. But our priority, Mr. Speaker, was not on that day with the company. Our priority was how do we make sure that those families and those children have a space so that tomorrow, the day after it's closed, they can have a daycare to go to. So that's been our priority, and we've been working with other agencies, other daycare centres who've come forward to tell us what spaces they have. And our priority has been and will continue to be to place those young children.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount, on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, neither the operators of the daycare nor the owner of the building can be reached by telephone. There was no effort to inform the parents or teachers over the weekend of the situation they may be facing Monday morning. Parents are now missing work and scrambling to find care for their children. So my question to the Minister, will the Minister indicate how much money concerning subsidies to these families and subsidies to the daycare were being paid out, and if so, how much money in advance was paid out by the Department to the daycare?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And if the member is interested in the particulars about funding for that particular daycare centre, I would be glad to provide that. But I do agree with the member that it was very unfair for the operator of that business to not give the department notice and to not give the families notice and to leave everyone scrambling on an early morning when they thought the daycare would be open.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, the provincial and federal governments have been working towards a compromise on the labour market agreement. Vulnerable Nova Scotians are being caught in the crossfire, and that is not fair. My question to the Minister is, will the Minister work to ensure
The most vulnerable Nova Scotians are not denied services because of the federal-provincial disagreement.
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. That's exactly what we're doing.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Valley Community Learning Network arranged staff layoffs for April the 1st with a return to work date of September. Mr. Speaker, the Hants Community Learning Association received notification March 19th that their funding application was to be revised and the province was not willing to consider any budgetary expenses over the base amount that they had provided the HCLA to work with. Mr. Speaker, for HCLA, this will mean that if they continue to maintain programs until June, they would be left with $8,000 to run programs from September to March 31st, 2015. My question to the minister, will the minister commit to working with these facilities through the negotiations with an eye to maintaining important services?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We provided 2 months of emergency funding to our partners to make sure that they would be able to continue to operate. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, places like the Dartmouth Learning Centre have been offering tuition-free programs for adults 19 years of age and older who are functioning at a pre-high school literacy level in the areas of basic literacy, GED preparation, employment readiness, life skills, health and safety, nutrition, and financial literacy. This is a vital source of education in our province for people who may have fallen through the cracks. These programs provide incredible benefit to both the student and the province. My question for the minister, will the minister commit to reducing the high anxiety created by this situation, settle this issue with the federal government, and allow the education centres to continue the wonderful job they have done so for so many years?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. I just want to make the Honourable Member aware that we have, in fact, an agreement in principle, and we are now in bilateral negotiations with the federal government, so it is my hope that we will have an agreement concluded soon. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sydney, Whitney Peer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. As every member of this House knows, the closure of the Veterans Affairs Office in Sydney has made life very difficult for our veterans. The NDP believes our veterans stood up for us when we needed them most, and now it's our turn to stand up for them. But, Mr. Speaker, at the March 24th Veterans Affairs Commission meeting, the Deputy Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs told the members of this House, in the previous 3 months, the Premier had no discussions with the federal government about the closure of the Sydney office and only sent one letter to the Minister Fantino. My question for the Premier, does he think sending a single letter to the federal minister is doing enough to support our veterans in their time of need?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, as I said to a question from a member of the official opposition last week, Mr. Speaker, there's been a number of conversations that I've had with members of the federal government dealing not only with veterans issues, Mr. Speaker, the previous question talked about the labour market agreement. Mr. Speaker, we're talking about the European Free Trade Deal to ensure that we can move forward. It was certainly our hope as we were moving towards the federal budget that we would have seen a change, that there would have been some financing in place to allow, Mr. Speaker, for those offices to remain open, or quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, to provide a better alternative or another alternative that would have been satisfactory, Mr. Speaker, to veterans across this province. We didn't see that, so we responded, Mr. Speaker, and now we're waiting for the federal government to return that response.
The Honourable Member for Sydney, Whitney Peer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in today's Herald, it was reported that the total budget for the Veterans Affairs Office in Sydney was just over $1 million. Mr. Speaker, at the Veterans Affairs Committee held in March, the Deputy Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs said the province could not create a veterans advocate to replace the services provided by the Sydney's Veterans Office because, I quote, the impact of downloading from Ottawa has been incredible. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier, now that he knows the full cost of the replacement services provided at the Veterans Affairs Office in Sydney, will the Premier reconsider in hiring a veterans advocate for Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it's my hope, Mr. Speaker, that the federal government will see the fact that we need them to provide us with a veterans advocate in this province, Mr. Speaker, as we clearly know. The responsibility to fund that, Mr. Speaker, is squarely lies with the federal government, Mr. Speaker. As you know, Mr. Speaker, there's been a change to the way we fund health care in this country, Mr. Speaker, now towards population base, Mr. Speaker, for a province like ours. It's an aging demographic, Mr. Speaker, chronic illnesses. It's creating a much greater burden on the provincial government to deliver on the health care commitments that we have to our citizens, Mr. Speaker. It's been, as alluded to in the previous question, Mr. Speaker, the provincial government has put out 2 months of emergency funding to ensure, Mr. Speaker, that organizations across this province can continue to deliver service to the most vulnerable Nova Scotians. Funding, Mr. Speaker, I might add, that should be coming from the federal government, Mr. Speaker. We cannot continue, Mr. Speaker, to backfill, Mr. Speaker, every time the federal government decides it's going to pull away from it. And I want to encourage all members of this House to continue to do the work they've been doing on behalf of veterans and their individual constituencies. I'll be an advocate on behalf of them, Mr. Speaker. And I hope that all members of this House will continue to support the government in its effort to have the federal government fund an advocacy program here in the province.
The Honourable Member for Sydney-Whitney-Pierre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The spring budget, the Liberal government revealed it will increase the combined minister's office budget at the departments of labour and advanced education, finance, environment and energy by approximately $750,000. When it comes to supporting veterans, this government has now not allocated a single new dollar for veterans. My question for the Premier is, why is this government willing to invest close to $1 million to support the day-to-day activities of four cabinet ministers, but not willing to provide the same support for our military veterans?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind all members of this House, Mr. Speaker, that members of this Cabinet continue, Mr. Speaker, to find savings inside the Department, Mr. Speaker. They've meant to, not only did they meet the 1% target of, Mr. Speaker, $28 million, Mr. Speaker, they found $76 million, Mr. Speaker. Quite frankly, they've gone above and beyond, Mr. Speaker. What I believe is important, though, Mr. Speaker, what I think is important here is that all provincial members remain focused on the fact that it is the national government's responsibility to deliver services to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and continue to deliver services to veterans, Mr. Speaker. All members of this House should be uniting behind. If, Mr. Speaker, if the members of this House can't unite behind veterans, Mr. Speaker, what can we unite behind? Let's get together and make sure that Ottawa continues, Mr. Speaker, to drive, Mr. Speaker, admit to the responsibilities, and ensure that we're veterans advocate in this province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Transportation. The stretch of Highway 104 between Sutherland's River and Antigonish is one that has seen many devastating accidents. Students traveling to St. Effects, tourists and residents, and even the Minister use this stretch of highway pretty regularly. In the past 5 years, there have been more than 65 motor vehicle accidents and 9 fatalities on this stretch of highway. But despite all this, there is no mention of the twinning of this section in the department's 5-year highway improvement plan. So my question today for the minister is, will the minister commit to twinning this stretch of road, given how dangerous it is?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite for the question. The member is certainly correct that the 104 is a stretch of the highway that I use twice weekly and that many members in the House and, of course, commuters across the province access. The reality is, and again, well taken with the points about the injuries and the collisions and, of course, the fatalities. Mr. Speaker, there's no member of this House, government or otherwise, that want to see those types of things happen on our roadways, as it is all about Nova Scotians, and road safety is our priority. Mr. Speaker, we have, as the member knows, we're in the process of completing Phase 2, which will be finished in 2016, which, again, as any commuters will know, that's been a tremendous impact for the travel back and forth in that corridor. And we're going to continue the discussions with the federal government. The Building Canada Fund will operate a new round very shortly. We're in discussions on those. There isn't a member in this legislature that wouldn't want to see the continuing of that 104 project and all projects, Mr. Speaker, as the twinning of the highways provides an added level of safety. But anything we can do in terms of the upgrades are important. So I do truly thank the member for the question. Road safety is what we're all about, Mr. Speaker, and we'll use the funding from the capital plan to create priorities that keep Nova Scotians safe. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I know it must be difficult to prioritize which roads are done when, and I guess I'm just a little curious about the metrics that the department uses to prioritize the major projects like this. And not only is this stretch of road dangerous, but the toll it takes on the volunteer firefighters who respond to the scene of these accidents is pretty devastating. And Barney's River Fire Chief Joe McDonald recently wrote a letter to the department urging that they make the twinning of this section a priority. And Mr. McDonald says it scares him how many people have died or were seriously hurt on the stretch of highway through his district just in the past few years. So my question today to the minister would be, what can the minister share with me that I can go back and tell Fire Chief Joe McDonald about this twinning of this stretch?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, to the member for the question. I actually did see that correspondence. Again, when you're hearing from those who put their lives on the line and spent a lot of their own personal time keeping Nova Scotians safe, you certainly take their word for it and what they say to heart. And again, it is a priority for us. We're doing the very best we can. The phase one, for example, is a $75 million project. And, Mr. Speaker, you can't put price tags on these types of things. But the reality is we have massive infrastructure deficits in this province. We certainly have to get creative as a government on how we complete those projects. Again, safety is first and foremost for us. Twinning is the Cadillac version of what we can do for road safety, so we do as much as we can, Mr. Speaker. We'll endeavour to let Nova Scotians know, certainly the legislature, but all Nova Scotians know what projects we've endeavoured into conversations with the feds with respect to Building Canada. The reality is that Nova Scotians can't do the heavy lifting on a lot of these large-scale projects, so we need our partners with the federal government. And I have to say, Mr. Speaker, the Building Canada program has been invaluable for us, so we'll continue to use that and we'll make decisions that are prioritized for Nova Scotians in the name of road safety. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and certainly the safety of Nova Scotians is paramount when it comes to considering whether or not this priority becomes a priority. But beyond that, there are economic benefits that our province could realize by twinning this stretch. Trucking companies cannot use longer combination vehicles on single-lane highways, and products could be moved more efficiently and reach more Nova Scotians if this stretch of highway were twinned. So my question today for the minister is, will he consider the economic benefits that may go along with twinning this stretch, and would he commit to seeing that this section is twinned during the government's current four-year mandate?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation, with a minute and 15 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to talk to you about the history of road building in Nova Scotia and the importance that it carries for the province, Mr. Speaker. You know, this is an important section of Nova Scotia's highways, and we certainly want to support economic development endeavours in all their forms. And again, we want to keep people safe, so we'll do our best to do that and prioritize based on traffic numbers and counts and the things that make Nova Scotians safe. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, last week he compared himself to a baseball team. Well, Mr. Speaker, the people we've talked to about their tires, they feel like they had a rod broken in them or something like that, Mr. Speaker. But you know what, Mr. Speaker? More people, since this minister became in charge of roads, they feel more like Dodgers, Mr. Speaker, dodging the potholes from one end of the province to the other. So as our Steinbrenner-esque minister would want us to know, Mr. Speaker, there's many teams supported in this House, and it's not the New York Yankees. It may be the Red Sox, but I think more importantly, the way the conditions of the roads are, they are really the Dodgers. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. Save it for next time. We'll move on to government business and government motions. The Honourable Deputy Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that you do now leave the chair and the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole on supply.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand here today to speak about an issue of great importance and of personal relevance to me and to many residents of Pictou County and beyond. I grew up in Pictou West. For as long as I have been alive, the pulp mill and boat harbour have been a part of my daily life. As a child, it was the cloud machine. It was something to be stared at in amazement